With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
With Danny Ruye, I'm Grant Paulson. You're listening to 106.7 The Fan. We're on Twitter, at Grant H. Paulson for me and at Funny Danny for DR. 1 hour from now, FP Santangelo, Nats broadcaster from Masson, who last night rewatched Game 5 on Instagram Live with Mike Rizzo and commented as Howie Kendrick hit a grand slam in the 10th inning to move the Nats past the Dodgers. So many dramatics in that amazing game. Looking forward to reminiscing with FP, but also trying to figure out what he thinks about this new idea that Major League Baseball could push forward with players sequestered at hotels and playing in 10 ballparks in Phoenix starting next month. We'll get into some of those details in just a few. But I should also let you know Clinton Portis is on the show in our back half today at 1:30, an hour and a half from right now. We'll talk to him about whether or not Dwayne Haskins will be looking over his shoulder at Kyle Allen. Every day at noon, we give you a Beltway Blitz, teams in town you care the most about. We start with our buddy Chris Russell. Redskins report, you see him on SI.com. You can read his work there. Slashy, why don't we start with the aforementioned Haskins versus Allen. You know, John Keim wrote in a piece on ESPN.com that essentially there's no player on the team who will have more of a negative effect this offseason from the shortened hiatus than Dwayne Haskins. Do you agree with that first and foremost? And what type of hurdles are being placed in front of him, do you think?
Totally agree. It's what I've been preaching not only since the Kyle Allen trade, since before. Just from this standpoint, it was already going to be an uphill climb no matter who the veteran quarterback was that they added, and I was firmly convinced that they were going to add one even before, again, the trade, regardless of Alex Smith. They absolutely had to add one. And just from the standpoint of having, again, to learn not only a new playbook, which fans go crazy with this stuff, they say, well, it's the same type of plays. Everybody runs the same. It's a different language. It's a different terminology. It's a different way of saying essentially the same thing. Grant, you know this from years on the beat. When I asked Case Keenum this last year, he's like, I don't know, this is like my seventh foreign language in the last 8 years or whatever it was, whatever his quote. That's how people view it, because it is a different language of doing essentially the same thing. So it was already an uphill climb, and now the fact that they've added somebody that has 2 years immersed in this system, that has 2 years side by side, hip to hip with the offensive coordinator. I mean, I don't mean to count Dwayne. I'm not counting Dwayne Haskins out. I still have hope, but to say he's not behind the eight ball here is people just doing the whole HTTR hype train thing and you media, you know, this and that, and you guys are always looking for. No, it's reality, and they know it, and the entire NFL knows it.
Russell, if the Redskins just stay at number two and draft Chase Young, you're talking about four first-rounders spent on a defensive line over the last 4 years, when you include Sweat, Payne, yep. Allen. You just paid Ioannidis. Yep. You've got Ryan Kerrigan, another longtime Redskin, who's going to set the all-time sack record for the franchise. I like Chase Young, too, but don't they need to invest somewhere else? Isn't that as good an argument as any for trading back or maybe ending up with Jeff Okuda or something other than yet another defensive lineman?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, it just so happens to be, though, a couple of things, I guess, for me, favor towards doing this with Chase Young. Number one, the athlete and the prospect that he is, Danny. But I guess more importantly, when you look at the situation, you mentioned Kerrigan, he's in the final year of his contract. Ryan Anderson is going into the final year of his contract. They're switching to a 4-3. You have a defensive coordinator and a defensive head coach. And, you know, we all know, right, if the quarterback is the captain or the most important thing on offense, and maybe left tackle is the second most important thing, well, pass rush is 1 or 1A on defense. And that's why you do a thing with Chase Young, even if you have currently assets invested. Now, what'll be more interesting to me, again, and I'm open to trading out if it's the right trade out. I don't want to go down lower than 5, top 6 at most. To me, what's going to be interesting is if they stay at 2 and go with Chase Young, how does that start to affect how they look at the future? Jonathan Allen, they've got a fifth-year option to pick up on. I'm sure they'll pick that up. But how do they then process the whole Anderson and Kerrigan situation? And, you know, at some point, you're going to have to let somebody go, right? And I think those would be the two obvious guys to let go if you're going to bring Chase Young in here.
I don't think the Redskins are going to be able to draft the tight end before the fourth round if they do some moving and shaking and add some picks in those mid-rounds. Mm-hmm. But it's not going to happen in the first. It's not going to happen where they don't have a pick in the second. And I think they're going to go corner in the third round at this point and try to find value there. Where are you at on Logan Thomas, Jeremy Sprinkle, Hale Henches as a trio at this point? Maybe Richard Rodgers if he's a factor.
Yeah. I mean, Rodgers is the best pass catcher out of that entire group if he can stay on the field, which he hasn't been able to do in over 2 years, right?
I've never heard that about a Redskins tight end before. That's a new thing.
That's a new thing.
Well, he's like the best of a bad bunch. Let's just put it that way. And I don't mean to be mean, but you know, we all remember. Well, some of us remember how good he was for a short period of time in Green Bay. Granted, with Aaron Rodgers as his quarterback, so you can't expect that. Now, again, he hasn't played much in 2 years. But if they can get that, okay, maybe. I think Hale Henches showed me a little something down the stretch last year. I don't want to go too crazy there. I feel better about Logan Thomas in a blocking and kind of release valve type role. I don't think he's a guy that's ever going to rack up 40 or 50 catches for you. At least I'd be surprised. So, again, yeah, I still think it's a target. But, Grant, I think it's a target in the third round at 66 overall. And there's a bunch of guys, you know, like Cole Kmet from Notre Dame, and maybe if you want to look at Claypool, also from Notre Dame, is more of a tight end than a receiver, even though he's got receiver speed. And then there's the kid from Florida Atlantic and Harrison Bryan. I mean, there's guys, Thaddeus Moss, Randy's kid, the kid from Vanderbilt, Pinckney. There's guys, but I don't know if there's like Kelsey or Reed 2013 third round style. So to your point, you might have to wait to get the proper value until the fourth or fifth round. And that's probably why they signed both Logan Thomas and Richard Rodgers, because they knew it was a weak crop in terms of the draft class.
Russell, thank you, buddy. Always appreciate it, dude.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate you.
We will see you, my friend. A little Wizards talk, please, Tommy. The show approximately now 200% more handsome. Nick Ashew, television's Nick Ashew, blazer-wearing, skinny jean-wearing Nick Ashew.
Can I jump in and ask him a question?
Of course you can, Grant.
Nick, are you combing your hair, putting product in? Are you dressing up nicely in your colorful shirts and your colorful sports jackets? Do you smell good, or do you smell like you haven't showered in a while? How are you treating this sequestered situation?
So there's a lot to unpack there, and I'll start with this. Dressing up is now sweatpants for me. Casual is pajama pants. The hair is growing out to a ridiculous length. I am still putting product in it because we are still doing daily stuff for NBC Sports Washington that involves being on camera, so I have to look semi-presentable. Though I will say I shaved today and trimmed the beard up for the first time in about 5 days, so I don't have the same standards that I used to have. But I did shower today, Grant, but I am wearing pajama pants right now, so it's kind of a balance.
I bet you he smells terrific. I bet you his natural scent, his musk after a workout, is better than me covered head to toe in cologne. Nick, the Major League Baseball, they're having powwows about figuring out how to play. What's going on with the NBA? What about the association? What are they trying to figure out, and kind of what are their next steps?
Well, one of the first things they're doing is talking about this horse tournament, or I guess just horse game. I'm not really sure what it would be, where guys are basically playing from their giant mansions and big basketball courts that they have. And I'm all for that. Inject it in my veins. If you can make it a drink, make it a drink, and I will chug it. I will take anything that involves some semblance of live sports or live basketball specifically right now. But baseball seems to be a little bit more bullish on their plan to sort of create a biodome. And if you haven't seen that movie, you should go back and watch the old classic of biodome. And that might be something similar to what baseball ends up doing. If the NBA could do something like that, that would be great. But we know that there's a ton of hurdles with this, a ton of hurdles to try and create some semblance of a season for the rest of the way. And it starts with quick testing, and then we move forward to all the other stuff. And plenty of things that I know nothing about because I'm not a doctor. I'm not one of these smart people with the CDC or anything like that. But I do know that leagues, including the NBA, are trying to come up with something to salvage their seasons. And I think as sports fans, if we can get anything and it's done safely, we'll take it right now.
Nick, what do you think about what baseball is trying to do? I'm curious. I mean, you have shows where you talk about all sports. They're saying basically get all the players to Phoenix, get them in hotels away from everyone else where they can't interact with other people. They're going to play games at 10 different spring training ballparks and the Diamondbacks home field at Chase. And essentially, they're hoping in June to start a socially distant major league season where they're sitting in the crowd, not in the dugout. And for the most part, baseball is happening as we know it.
It sounds like a logistical nightmare, to be honest with you. The amount of things they have to take in consideration, from the health and safety of players to actually controlling where they are and who comes in contact with who, how often do they test these guys to make sure that they don't have this, to how the games are actually done, how many per day, like all of these things and stuff that goes on behind the scenes. And I guess there'd be a whole new schedule that would go it somehow be involved with this too. I'm just glad I'm not one of the people that has to do any of these types of decision making, go through this process. But I know this, I would love to see them make it work. And if they can do it, just like with the NBA, if they can do it in a way that, you know, keeps everybody safe and is, let's be honest, socially acceptable right now, where we're talking about social distancing, if they can do that, I think we'd be all for it. But man, that is a long to-do list to make that happen.
Who's the MVP of this season if it doesn't continue?
I mean, it's got to be Giannis, and the way the Bucks played this year. They were on pace for close to, if not 70 wins. I'd have to go back and do the math. I mean, who knows what that would be at this point. It's been a while. But, yeah, like, Giannis has had a fantastic season. I would put LeBron right up there too. But with what Giannis is able to do with a team that it's a team that has a lot of balance but doesn't have a second player in, you know, Anthony Davis, that's incredibly talented. Chris Middleton's the number two guy in the Bucks, and he's no Anthony Davis. I would give it to Giannis again.
Nicholas, you are very good looking, and you're fun to have on the radio as well. Thank you for the time.
So true.
Gentlemen, I'll see you soon.
Look him up on Twitter if you want to see what he looks like. It is worth your time. At Nick Ashew. We're Grant and Danny. You are listening to The Fan. Since he technically, you know, like, now works at NBC Sports Washington and isn't as much with us at 106.7 The Fan, he can't report us to HR, right, Danny? Isn't that the rules on that?
So because there is that relationship with, you know, because the junkies are on there as well, but we are not subject to those harassment rules that NBC Sports Washington makes you sign, because we're not employees of there. We're employees of Entercom and The Fan.
So we should be fine.
Well, yeah, but we're not supposed to harass anybody, but especially not Entercom employees. I think we're in a gray area, but as long as we get verbal consent, I think it's okay.
All right, then I'll take it.
Yeah, I think we're good.
Nick,
we're good.
He seems to keep coming on, so far I don't think,
yeah, right,
we've crossed any boundaries. We're Grant and Danny. You're listening to The Fan. The all-decade team in the NFL came out yesterday. What about the all-decade team for the Redskins? We will try to tackle that next right here on The Fan. G&D, welcome back. 106.7 The Fan. 18 minutes afternoon. I'm in my basement in Virginia. Danny is in his laundry room in D.C. You'd moved out of your laundry room and into like a living room area, which I thought was high risk, more traffic. I'm not sure why we did that, but you did. It was very successful, so kudos to you. But now you're back in your laundry room. What happened?
You had to move back. So sitting in this chair that's not meant to be sat in, the way that I'm sitting in it, it just kills my neck and like upper back. I basically have permanent crick in it now because of doing that for several days.
Guy,
so I ran the risk.
Apart.
Yeah, so I ran
you're
the risk.
You're wearing a glove on your hand and you have a neck and back problem now.
Yeah. So I ran a wrist brace for my tendonitis. So I ran the risk and moved out into kind of my downstairs sort of TV area, playroom, whatever you want to call it. And the problem is the sound from me carries up the stairs, which made it so that the kids could hear. Oldest understands what's at stake and what's going on. The youngest hears dad and wants to, you know, move down here sometimes, wants to come play. That led to meltdowns. That led to problems. So I was kicked back into the laundry room, into this incredibly uncomfortable chair. So now I pretty much have the permanent can't turn my head sort of situation. That's
Should
where we
just get a nice chair since we're going to be doing this for a few weeks, I would imagine? Is that worth the expenditure?
We have already done that. We have gotten – so the first attempt, we're going to try to put like some kind of cushion on this thing. I believe it's not going to work. I've been on record as saying that, but I'm willing to try. You know, we're trying to limit expenditures, as you can imagine. So if that doesn't work, then we're springing for the Eric Bickle office chair.
Can I have
it down here. It's going to be clunky and awkward, but we're trying.
What kind of chair is it? If you wouldn't mind showing me, we got the Zoom video of you and I.
See if you can see it. I'm gonna stand up.
It's just like a kitchen chair, table.
I don't know
chair?
What you call it. It's multi-purpose. Like you can, it's indoor, outdoor. It's
lift it up a little bit.
Yeah, it's like a light metal kind of thing.
Oh, that's a terrible chair. Oh my God.
Yeah, it's just
it's basically just a chair you would have outside. It's very light metal. You could bend it if you pushed hard enough.
Yeah, if you really wanted to and wanted to be sore for 6 weeks, you could. Yeah, it's not good.
It's made out of like soda can material, essentially.
Yeah, yeah, it's like that light, but strong enough to support my fat butt. But yeah, horribly uncomfortable, and it's basically my entire upper back, lower neck is constantly sore now because I have to sit in here and do this. But again, it's a relative complaint. I'm not digging ditches.
I'll tell you what I'll do for you.
What
As
is that?
You know, I'm trying to move, and I'm getting rid of things anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a really nice, big, plush, like, leatherish computer chair on wheels. Would you have any interest in it?
Yeah.
Matter of fact, I would. This would be perfect for you right now.
No, it would be. I mean, it's awkward for when – the reason that I'm using this in particular is because – it becomes an issue, right? So when that chair's not in use, and think of regular life if and when it ever does happen again, now I've just got this computer chair and no real good place to put it. You know,
I don't mind taking it back downstairs. When we're back at work, is what I'm saying. This will get you through. I sent you a picture. Tell me what you think of it.
All right, give me
so this actually could parlay into what I was going to bring up, which is I've got hours to kill today where I have to be out of my house, okay? So our house went on the market yesterday. Not a big deal last night, but we were out of the house. This is a good thing for three appointments for people to come see the home. It was like 2 hours where we left around dinner time. So we went and we got dinner. We walked around the park, like really nice lake, and we kind of passed the time that way. Today, and we're capping this at the end of the day because I don't want to have like 40 collections of people coming through the house during going on. We have five appointments between 2 o'clock and 8 o'clock.
That's wild.
Then we're basically just going to make the decision as to what we're doing with our house like tonight or tomorrow morning. I say all this to tell you, we have to leave our house today at like 2:15 and not come back until 8:15, okay? In a normal world, not a problem at all. We'd go to the movies. We'd go out to eat. We would find an activity. Maybe we'd go bowling. We would do something. We've got a dog. We've got a one-year-old. We're not allowed to go anywhere in public. Basically, we have to be in our car or just walking around random outdoor neighborhoods. And we have like 6 hours to kill. I have no idea what we're going to do. But maybe part of that could have to do with meeting you for this chair if you're actually interested. I don't really know. But we right now we have no plan, and I'm looking for ideas. So if anyone wants to tweet me how I can spend my 6 hours out of my house today in a very safe, socially distant manner, please do so at Grant H. Paulson.
So I'll have to, of course, pass this up to my direct supervisor. AKA the secretary of furniture, my lovely lady wife. But this is a promising possibility of you coming to my rescue, my friend. This, especially if it's a temporary solution, this
could be that chair is sat dormant for a week. I have to move it out of this room every time I do showings. Anyway, it has to be crammed into the laundry room, so it's just kind of in the way. And I will gladly take it back post move, post when you and I are back in studio, because it's a chair I use. When I have my desk and my computer set up, it's just out of the house right now.
I like it. I like it.
So it's just a thought.
I'm smelling what you're stepping in.
Just a suggestion. But let me know. If you want it, it's yours. The All-Decade team in the NFL came out yesterday. Adrian Peterson's on the list. Congratulations to him. He's one of the best running backs ever.
Long-time
Redskins great. Would you consider that like a Redskins victory that they have a player on the list? Because he's a current Redskin who's on the All-Decade team. You'd give them credit for having one player on the list, right?
Yeah. Well, you give them credit for, pouncing when everyone else thought he couldn't play anymore. So the Doug Williams, I did this myself, secret phone call that he made to bring Peterson in to work out. You deserve credit there, but no, this is not a drafted talent. This is not a long-term acquisition. This is a guy that happens to be playing on his last stop with you, who is well-deserved of being on the All-Decade team.
No other Redskins made the list. The only guy who's a true Redskin that would have repped the organization in the way that when you get elected into the Hall of Fame, you know, you go in for a team that would have been on the All-Decade team as Mr. Redskin, so to speak, would have been Trent Williams. They picked four tackles. He wasn't one of them. I've got to imagine, you know, he's number five of the decade and the first guy out. But they picked your longtime Joe Thomas types, you know, Tyron Smith, who's battled with Trent Williams back and forth as the preeminent left tackle of their era. Jason Peters, who was special, and I remember talking to Trent in the locker room for years, asking him, you know, if it's not you, who's the best left tackle in football? And he'd always name Jason Peters in Philadelphia, who's now, by the way, 36 years old and looking for a one-year contract after leaving Philly last year. But Williams didn't make it. I don't think there was anybody else from the skin standpoint that would have even gotten much consideration.
No, it shows you how dire it's been. It shows you how under-talented and how unsuccessful they've truly been. A couple blips, right? A 10-6 season, a 9-7 season, and that's all she wrote. That's how you get nobody on the All-Decade team. I'm sure there are other franchises who don't have good representation, but this is how it's been, right? This is you push all your chips in just to be okay. All-Decade stuff comes from consistent winning. It comes from consistent high-level play, and the Redskins quite simply have not had that.
So I want to get into a Redskins All-Decade team. We were going to do offense this segment, defense next segment. We don't really have enough time to break down the entire offense, but we can just kind of start it off and pick up and finish this next. And, of course, as always, you guys can chime in if you disagree with any of the names that we come up with or think somebody needs to be included. But I'll give you my names. I know you went through this last night and put together your list as well. You give me yours, and let's see if we have any disagreements. So the All-Decade team for the Redskins, Cousins at quarterback's a slam dunk. I mean, you can make the case statistically he's the most accomplished regular season Redskins quarterback we've had in terms of the numbers. But at quarterback for the last 10 years, it goes without saying he's the guy, no?
Without question. And, you know, you could point to the electric rookie season of Griffin, but then you look at just overall numbers. I think Cousins has twice as many touchdowns, more than twice as many yards, et cetera. Just he produced more than Griffin did in that one, you know, heroic season before sort of falling off. So to me, there's no comparison.
How about running back Alfred Morris? I thought for a second maybe AP could be in the mix, but when you actually look at total rushing attempts and yards, Morris 4 years versus, you know, Peterson two, it's actually not that close. Obviously, Alf had the 1,600-yard rookie year. He had a 1,300 and a 12-yard season that followed that. Really an unbelievable stretch to begin his career in Washington before it fizzled out when the Shanahans left after 1 year of Gruden, and he ended up going on to San Francisco and Dallas. But I think Morris at running back over AP was easy for me.
Fifth all-time in rushing yards for a Washington Redskin, Alfred Morris. I think, you know, nothing else that matters there. We talk about touchdowns, overall production, over 4.4 yards a pop. That among qualified running backs is the best in Redskins history. Yeah, that's the guy.
Wide receiver is pretty fascinating. Let's start next at the wide receiver position where you had Pierre Garçon, DeSean Jackson, Santana Moss, Jamison Crowder, and so many others. 800-636-1067 if you want to be a part of our naming of the Redskins All-Decade team. We'll also take our crack on the defensive side of the ball next on G&D. The Movie Club at 1245 is 20 minutes away. The NFL All-Decade team came out yesterday, so we figured we would give you the Redskins All-Decade team today, and we're working our way through the offense right now on Grant and Danny. You can call us if you've got any disagreements. 800-636-1067. Would love to hear from you. So we went Cousins at quarterback, Morris at running back. Got to give Alf a little love. 2012. Never forget, by the way, the 200-yard, three-touchdown game he had in Week 17 to win the division and send the Cowboys packing at FedEx Field. Everyone thinks of that as kind of like the Griffin season. Even that game you hear people talk about, like the when Griffin beat the Cowboys. He was Brunellish. He was like 9 of 18 for 100 yards in that game. Alf ran for two Bills and three touchdowns to move past Dallas.
Yeah, that offense, the threat, the idea of Griffin was really important because it let Alf just run wild. He was sensational that year. Just the perfect, the quintessential Mike Shanahan style running back. Guy off the scrap heap. I remember talking to him preseason thinking, you know, he might make this team as a fullback. Wow. About 1,600 yards and double-digit touchdowns later. What an incredible campaign for him.
So all-decade wide receivers for the Redskins. If you go with two wideouts and a slot, then you can fit three or four really good ones in. Mm-hmm. If you only go with, you know, two total, it gets more difficult. To get to 11, you know, you'd have to either go two tight ends or three wide receivers. What would you prefer?
So I went with the two wide receivers and a slot. And really the debate is amongst four people. Just if you just want to do wide receiver in general and sort of pick three, I'm fine with that as well.
So Pierre Garçon's got to be on, I think, from 10 to 19 in that decade.
Uh-huh.
He has the most games of any wide receiver, 74. He's got the most targets, 579. He's got the most catches, 376. And he has the most yards with 4,500. The next debate is who starts opposite him out wide. And I think it comes down to DeSean Jackson or Santana Moss. Tana played in 70 games compared to Jackson's 40, so leg up for Moss there. He had 232 catches, Jackson just 142 for the Redskins in the decade. But it was 2,700 yards for Jackson, 2,800 for Moss. Moss averaged 12 yards a catch while Jackson averaged 19, was obviously more dynamic, 14 touchdowns compared to Moss's 20. I go Santana because I think he just had better numbers overall. But Jackson was obviously a much scarier weapon when he was in Washington.
The longevity here is what it is. And listen, no one's asking all-time better Redskin at Santana Moss, the number of years. But his best work is 05 through, I would say, 2010. But 2010's included in our discussion. From 2010 through 2014, Santana Moss was still playing, still chopping wood, still doing some things. His best season was the first one there in 2010. But you add up the total yards, total impact. He went from number one to kind of number two and then maybe even a third option, but still productive. You look at that 2012 season, 575 yards and eight touchdowns. That's a sneaky amount right there, eight touchdowns in 2012. Jackson basically the one excellent, unbelievable campaign. And then, you know, sort of the typical DeSean Jackson story, right? Injury plagued. In and out of the lineup, you know, not that much of a contribution in years two and or rather in year two here in Washington. So overall body of work, narrowly Santana Moss in the 2010s. But if we do just three wide receivers, Jackson would be my third over Crowder. But if we're doing two in a slot, then I go Moss narrowly over DeSean Jackson.
I think you're right about that. Jackson close, but maybe needed another season of numbers to get past Moss in some categories. In the slot, I guess you could go Moss there to your point, but Jamison Crowder, to me, is the truest slot receiver
That's right.
The Redskins. 28 games, 329 targets, 221 catches, 2,600 yards. So I'm with you. It sounds like lockstep in how you did the receivers with Garçon, Moss, Crowder, and no Jackson.
Yeah, if you're picking three, like Major League Baseball, you just pick three outfielders, you may end up with three right fielders or three center fielders. If you're just picking three receivers, Jackson's my three seed, almost like a 2A right behind Moss, really, really close for me on that debate because the two top Jackson seasons in the 2010s are really, really good. I would say, though, if you're going two in a slot, then Crowder's the number one slot. I don't think anybody's close in that department.
All right, so you get back then to the tight end position. If you're only going one, it's obviously Jordan Reed, and,
yep.
And that's not close. I mean, he's second this decade in catches for the Redskins with 329. He'd also be second in yards with over 3,300, and his 24 touchdowns are actually number one. So there's not a lot of reason to spend any time at tight end. If you went with a second, you know, probably Vernon Davis. On the offensive line, Williams is the one guy who stands out. I don't know how good it is on the radio to go through interior linemen, but, you know, guys like Will Montgomery, Brandon Scherff, Corey Lichtensteiger, Spencer Long, probably Morgan Moses at right tackle. Those are the names that jump out at you, I think, first blush.
Yeah, for sure. So the only debate for me, really, was what you do at left guard and center, because each one of these guys that played guard also played center, right? So Montgomery was bounced around, Spencer Long was bounced around, Lichtensteiger moved in and out. I chose Spencer Long, didn't have as long a career with the Redskins as Lichtensteiger. Just I felt better about Spencer Long as a player. I don't really have great evidence to back that up, by the way. You know what I mean? There's no, I can't definitively tell you that one guy was a better player than the other. So I kind of threw Spencer Long in there just to say, hey, remember him. But I'm not ride or die.
All right, let's go to the defensive side of the ball. Start on the defensive line. Now, I went with guys who get to the quarterback and can rush the passer and get sacks and quarterback contact. I took two defensive ends, you know, the traditional 3-4 alignment the Redskins have actually used since the start of the decade, 2010 officially, when they went to the 34 under Shanahan and Haslett. I took Matt Ioannidis at defensive end because he actually is the leader in sacks among down defensive linemen this decade for Washington, believe it or not. Jonathan Allen at the other defensive end spot, and Barry Cofield. It was a true nose tackle. You know, you could have kind of played some guys at nose, Daron Payne, or maybe you could have gone with like Chris Baker, who played inside a little bit. He was primarily an end. But Cofield was a really good nose tackle. So I go Ioannidis, Cofield, Allen up front in the all-decade 34.
Only difference for me, and I think one more good campaign will bump, will flip my order here. I've got Chris Baker just ahead of Ioannidis. I've got Allen. I'm with you on that steady, consistent play. Cofield is a guy that we don't properly appreciate, quite frankly, for his few years in Washington. I thought a really good player, even if you know some of the sexy stats don't jump out at you. But Chris Baker, starter, contributor, again, doesn't jump out, but if you look at approximate value, one of the things that smart people try to assign, just ahead of Matt Ioannidis there. So I give the nod to him as kind of a space eater, letting other people behind him work. I think Ioannidis will supersede him. As soon as he gets back on the field and gets a few more games, he'll jump ahead. But that was the only one that I would maybe make an argument differently on. But, yeah, that's a good list.
Ioannidis, 54 games. Baker, 76. So he played a lot more for the Redskins. Ioannidis, 20.5 sacks to Baker's 11.5.
Yeah, far less counting stats in that regard.
You can make the case that maybe Baker more of a run stuffer, I suppose. But 103 tackles to 84. So the ratio in terms of game played is somewhat comparable. Combined tackles, 51 more than Ioannidis in the nearly 25 or so more games played, but Ioannidis has 7 more quarterback hits already than Baker did. So that's an interesting debate. That's a good one where we differ because there hadn't been a lot of those. All right, then we get to the linebacking core. Kerrigan and Arakpo on the outside for me. I thought about Preston Smith outside next to Kerrigan, but Arakpo had better counting stats in a similar number of games, and so I went with him ultimately.
Well, Arakpo had a lot more games than Preston Smith did, and the rates for impact plays dramatically favor Preston Smith in terms of quarterback hits, tackles for loss.
What eyeballs would probably tell people too, right? I mean,
yeah.
he flashed more often.
Arakpo, now this is, again, some personal bias here, but I think that guy had nobody pushing him, had no one behind him, and they were just as good when Rob Jackson would take over. To me, this is the guy that if you rush the passer enough times, you'll end up with some quarterback sacks. Right? Sort of the, you know, if you're out on the field and you're playing with Magic Johnson, you'll end up with some buckets because that guy will get you some assists. He got to play a ton, whereas Preston Smith, part of a rotation. But you look at impact plays, game-changing plays, to me, Smith had the answer, even if he had a couple fewer years. So Arakpo, I believe, a Redskin, I want to say, for either 5 or 6 seasons and fairly similar counting stats.
You're forgetting that how often, though, he was hurt. I mean, he played 9 fewer games than Preston Smith did with the Redskins this decade. So Arakpo had 55 total games. Smith had 64. Starts were much more similar because Smith didn't start all of his games early on. So 55 starts for Arakpo, 50 for Smith. 29 sacks for Arakpo to 24.5 to Preston. 56 quarterback hits Arakpo, 59 for Preston Smith. Arakpo made 37 more tackles in 9 fewer games than Preston Smith did. But remember, he had the peck over and over again and all those different issues. So he actually played 9 fewer games than Preston Smith did.
So are you sure about that total?
I'm looking at Pro Football Reference from 2010 to 2019.
Oh, you know what? So I counted 2009. That was my mistake because that was okay.
His rookie
right.
year was quote unquote before the 10th
yep,
season.
You're right. He had 16 games. That's where I couldn't figure out where your numbers are coming from. Yep, I think that's probably right then.
And the sacks, I mean, if you add that was probably his best sack season. Granted,
it was, yeah,
11. Came in a game against the Raiders. So I don't know, you know, what that necessarily says or
like
means.
A quarter of his career sacks came against the Raiders in 2 games, by the way.
We can come back and finish up on the inside linebackers and the secondary a little bit later on, but I don't want to jip the movie club, which is next. Dar's got our list of films we can choose from for tonight. Got to pick a new movie. Last night we watched The Dirty Dozen, thanks to our buddy Cookie Duck Dynasty, so we can talk about that classic that was nominated for 4 Academy Awards that came out in the late 60s. You're listening to Grant and Danny on The Fan. Nats television analyst F.P. Santangelo joins us at 1, 12 minutes from now. Does he think Major League Baseball's idea could work? Players go to a hotel where they're tested daily and stay there in Phoenix. 10 ballparks, spring training, big league and otherwise, are used to play games starting as soon as maybe late May, early June. And they have socially distant Major League Baseball that we get to watch on television regularly. What do you think? We'll ask FP coming up at 1 o'clock. Clinton Portis, Redskins legend, on the show at 1:30 today, right here on Grant and Danny. But it is time for the movie club. Last night, Danny, the Dirty Dozen, the film, came out in 1967. It's a long runtime, so you got to want it or do what I did and break it into kind of a a day-night doubleheader. This was a 2-hour, 30-minute movie, 3 wins, 8 nominations in terms of awards, including 4 Academy Award nominations and 1 win. The cast is pretty epic for its time. One guy I noticed very, very young in the movie who turned out to have a hell of a career was Donald Sutherland, who played Vernon Pinkley. But basically, this is the story, and it's a really, really cool story. During World War II, a U.S. Army major is assigned a dozen convicted murderers to train and lead into a mass assassination mission of German officers. So the opening scene of the film is basically them sitting at this table telling him he needs to get these guys together. And then it's a really cool process to try to get these guys to buy in and become a team and, you know, want to help. And he kind of dangles their futures and their lives ahead of them because most of them are going to be sentenced to death if not for helping him out. But it ends up being a pretty cool journey. I know you said you fell asleep, but that isn't to say that you didn't enjoy the movie. It's a classic, man. I'd never seen it. And it's not black and white. You know, that would have been tough for me. Close enough to it, but it was really, really good.
No, it's just a different era of filmmaking, I would say. I mean, this is your Suicide Squad before Suicide Squad, right? This is the non-comic version of it, you know? And there are guys that were just massive stars at that point that, you know, we don't really think of. They're afterthoughts now. Like, someone like Charles Bronson is known for, like, sort of just spitting out his lines like this in, like, an action movie, you know, just kung-fuing people. He was Liam Neeson before Liam Neeson throat chopping, you know, a guy like Ernest Borgnine or Lee Marvin, who was just a man's man at that point as Major Reisman, however you say it. It was just terrific. I mean, this is, as you said, it moves slower than what we're used to today. Our ADD generation needs something to blow up every 7 seconds, and if there's
it would need to be, if it's redone, it would need to be a lot more kind of up tempo, succinct. Yeah. We need to get to the punchlines faster.
Yeah, it's long, but this is in the era of where you know, you have nothing else, you got no alternatives. You're going to the film, you're going to sit down at the movies, and you're going to sit through some of this stuff to let filmmakers let their movies breathe a little bit, you know, without some of the special effects that we kind of come to rely on here. We're not just putting it in post. We're not just doing a green screen. This is, you know, the blood, sweat, and tears kind of a thing. It's a really, really strong flick. You touched on Donald Sutherland really good. Telly Savalas is in this. George Kennedy, Jim Brown has a nice role. I mean, Bronson, Borgnine, we already touched on. A really strong flick. I hadn't seen it in a long time, so it was kind of fun to get back in that world. It's not the movie's fault that I couldn't keep my eyes open.
Jim Brown, 52 credits on IMDb. Did a deep dive on his acting career last night. But it started in 64, his first role. This was 67. This was, I think, his first kind of slam dunk project. And he had 2 movies come out in 67, or maybe 1 TV show, 1 movie. And then really 68, 69, launching what was a pretty impressive career after that. So check it out if you have not. It takes a little while. Maybe save it for the weekend at this point now. But you got nothing better to do. It might be worth your time if you haven't seen it, which is the boat I was in until last night. All right, Dar put together our list for tonight's movie.
Here we go.
So, Brendan, the floor is yours. Let us know what we need to know and give us our order to pick the movie today.
So tonight's theme is buddy cop movies.
Love and it.
Stunning.
We're going to start with Tom.
All right, go ahead.
Okay, so all of these are readily available on Netflix or streaming somewhere. You don't have to pay for them.
Just to wait so Dark can get the other guys on the table, by the way. That's what this entire exercise is.
That's not true. There are a lot of actually good movies on here. There are like a couple bad ones. I'm sorry in advance. Stakeout with Richard Dreyfuss and Emilio Estevez, available on HBO.
Okay, I'm going to let it ride, so I'm going to say yes.
Okay. 21 Jump Street, On Demand, USA.
Absolutely.
Okay. Let's Be Cops, On Demand, FX.
No.
Darn. Die Hard with a Vengeance, available on HBO.
Yes.
The Nice Guys, available on HBO.
Not to be confused with The Other Guys.
Correct.
Yes.
Okay. Lethal Weapon, available on Netflix.
Riggs.
Absolutely.
Six Underground, available on Netflix.
No.
Okay. Spencer Confidential, available on Netflix.
Yes.
Game Over Man, featuring Adam Devine and all the other Workaholics guys, available on Netflix.
No.
That sounds like a Dar hope.
Yeah, that's what Dar
he just
wanted.
Threw that on there
his
for
voice
a prayer.
Went up at the end.
Yeah. Yeah, that's his 15 seed there. He's trying to knock off at number two.
I've absolutely seen it, and it's.
Let me guess, you like it.
I'm glad you said no. War on Everyone, featuring Michael Pena and Alexander Skarsgård, available on Netflix.
Yes, because I like those actors.
Coffee and Kareem, featuring Ed Helms, on Netflix.
Saw the trailer for this over the weekend, yes.
Last but not least, The Other Guys, available on Netflix.
Just because Danny wants to say no, I'm going to say yes.
There you go.
Okay.
Love it.
Grant, you're up next.
All right, let's do this.
Here we go.
Stakeout.
Yes.
Okay. 21 Jump Street.
No.
Okay. Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Yes.
The Nice Guys.
No. Which one is The Nice Guys, by the way?
Russell Crowe and...
Okay, yeah, I definitely don't want to watch that.
Oh, okay. No.
That would be like our 10th Coen brother movie, I think. Didn't they do that movie? I don't remember. All right, keep going, sorry.
Okay. Lethal Weapon.
Definitely.
Spencer Confidential.
Definitely.
War on Everyone.
No.
Coffee and Kareem.
Definitely.
Okay. The Other Guys.
Yes.
Wow. So we got a pretty big list to choose from here. I got to narrow it down from 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Somehow I think you'll be able to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stakeout.
No.
Okay. Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Yes.
Okay. Lethal Weapon.
Yes.
Spencer Confidential. I'm just going to put no.
Thank you.
Why are you so against it, Danny? It's not that bad.
I'm not against it, but I got to narrow it down at some point. I got to say no to something. You guys left me with a huge
prize. Four times this has been on the list, and you've said no 4 times. That sounds like you're against it to me.
It does sound like you're against it.
Previous evidence. That's not what's on trial here. This is today. We're talking about today.
Okay, coffee and cream.
I'm sorry.
You know what? I'm just going to put no for that.
I'm going to say no to coffee and cream. I don't know what that is.
The Other Guys.
You know what? So that will make 3, and that's fine. I'm going to say yes to The Other Guys. Yeah. It's up to somebody else.
Wow. How about that?
It's up to The Other Guys. I feel bad now because everyone asks me why I hate it so much, and I'm trying to explain that I'm just trolling Dar. But it's time for that to end. It's new beginnings.
All right, so who's closest to the studio right now?
The only other person here is Brock, so he'll have to make the call.
All right, Cookie Duck Dynasty, who's become a fixture now, is our final decider.
We should really just make him a part of the movie club because he has to make the call every day.
He's basically in the movie club. He does have more power, it seems like, than anybody else as to what we watch. He can ruin our nights or make our nights. Dar, tell Cookie what we're deciding between.
He's walking in the studio right now, so he's choosing between Die Hard with a Vengeance, Lethal Weapon, or The Other Guys.
Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Boom goes the dynamite.
Wow, yeah. I'm actually excited for that. Where is that one streaming, Dar?
HBO.
HBO On Demand. Let's ride. We love it. Job well done by everyone. Die Hard it is. That's the movie club film for tonight. FP Santangelo next. Will Major League Baseball be back and in action in May into June? They are trying to put a plan together that the Players Association, and leading health experts are so far endorsing. We'll talk about it with FP Santangelo next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.